You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Thursday, June 8th, and I'm practicing to record these things, which is really different from practicing for performing them, because performing is all about vulnerability and letting go and not stopping to fix and just accepting what happens in the moment. And recording is all about perfect. I'm trying very hard to change my mind so that I can go into the recording studio and be open-hearted and expressive and play beautifully rather than perfectly. And intellectually, I totally know that that's what I want, but it's really, really hard to make myself kind of care about that instead of just getting the notes right. Let me play for you a little bit, and then I want to tell you a story about my last performance of these etudes and how I learned an important lesson. So, let me play... You know, let me play Opus 25, number 1, because I haven't played this for you for a while, I think. This is the harp etude. Okay, so I had the opportunity to play in California on Paderewski's piano in Paso Robles, which was just a wonderful opportunity, and there was a terrific audience, and it was a beautiful space. Paderewski, in case you don't know, was a very, very important pianist of the 20th century, who also seems to have been instrumental in starting the wine industry in California. He apparently brought vines over and planted them, and... I picture him smuggling them in his coat, but I think he probably was above board about it. Anyway, it was great, and I got to hang out with my sister and my dear, 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 dear friend from college, and it was wonderful. But the concert was at 3 o'clock, and 3 o'clock in the afternoon is right around my energy dip. Like, my energy starts kind of tanking about around 1:30, and then... unless I really force myself, I'm fairly useless until 4. I mean, not useless, but let's just say it's not the best part of my day. I'm good in the early morning. I'm great late at night. I'm not so good in the afternoon. Anyway, so the concert was at 3, and I was having lunch with my friend at like 12:30 or 1 or something, and it was really tired, like bone tired. And I just felt like I'm not going to have the energy to play all of these etudes and say everything I need to say and do the whole show. I better have a cup of coffee. So this is where I'm exhibiting my ignorance. I didn't know that cold brew was a special thing. I thought it was just like fancy and expensive, but I didn't know that it was actually more hardcore. I had never had cold brew with coffee before. So I'm at this restaurant and I asked them if they have iced coffee, and they said, we have cold brew. And I said, that'll be fine. So I drank cold brew coffee about an hour and a half before I played. That was not a good idea. It had not even occurred to me to have a rule for myself about not drinking coffee in the few hours before I play, because usually I play at night and usually I don't have coffee after about one because I won't sleep. So it just like hadn't, it's kind of one of those things that hadn't really come up. So I went over to the place and I warmed up and I put on my dress and my shoes and all of that and my lipstick. And I started feeling like my fingertips and my palms were tingling, not shaking, but like tingling, like maybe neurological event kind of thing. And I could play, I could do what I need, but it just was such a bizarre physical sensation. And I started thinking, am I nervous? Like, I don't think I'm nervous, but this certainly is a physical symptom that seems like nerves. This is really, and of course I forgot that the coffee thing didn't even strike me until like the next day that might have had anything to do with anything. And I said, this is really strange. Well, this is really weird. Okay, I guess I'll just go out and play and see what I can do. So I went out and I started, as I always do, with the three little Nouvelle etudes. So the first one starts this way. And I actually am not sure what... I was playing the first one, which is this one. And I think I got to... I actually don't remember if I had a memory slip in this one or not. Let's say for the sake of the story that I did. And had to sort of make something up, which I'm not doing right now. This is Chopin's music. But let's say that I just couldn't remember and then started making something up. I don't know. So that's my recreation of that. But I don't think that's what happened, but let's say. And then I played the second one and it was okay. And then I got to the third one, which has been a bear to memorize. This one just doesn't quite, it's never quite sat right with me. Ugh, gross. Let me do that better. That makes it worse. There we go. Okay, so anywhere, while I'm playing this, I can't tell the story and play at the same time. While I'm playing it, I know, first of all, I know that that's the one where the memory is shaky more than the others, and also I'm kind of mildly freaked out by this thing that happened, and my fingertips are tingling, and I think maybe I'm having a neurological event. I say that I facetiously, but I actually do have, like, my mother died of an aneurysm and my uncle died of an aneurysm, so I do occasionally think, like, huh, maybe I'm gonna have an aneurysm. Anyway, so I'm playing and I completely forget not only what's the next chord, and not only, and not where are my hands supposed to be, and not just what key am I in, but also what is the texture of this piece? How is this supposed to sound? And I really have no idea. So I'm playing, I'm just sort of making something up as I'm playing. And what I'm, and I'm trying to find my way to, first of all, I'm trying to find my way back to the piece, but that's not happening at all. So I'm just trying to play something. And as I'm playing, and as I'm just sort of improvising the best I can in the style of Chopin, this is the dialogue that I'm having, or I guess the monologue that I'm having inside my head. Okay, I'm about to finish this piece, whatever this is now, and talk to the audience, because I always talk to the audience before I play the big set, the first, you know, Opus 10, which is a big set of 12. And what I usually say when I start is, Chopin wrote those three pieces as an afterthought, but I love to start with them because I think they illustrate so beautifully that when Chopin writes an etude, he doesn't just write an incredibly difficult virtuosic piece that demands and develops a specific technique. He writes a really beautiful, emotional piece of music. So I'm thinking, okay, I need to play something that sounds like a beautiful, emotional piece of music. So I'm trying to play something that sounds like a beautiful piece, emotional piece of music. And I don't know, I have no idea what key I'm in, no idea what key I'm supposed to be in. Like, I have no idea that I'm supposed to be in F minor, which is what it is. This is F minor. And I'm also thinking, should I tell them? Should I tell them that I just have this memory slip? Also, there's video projected of my hands in this concert, which I loved and was totally cool. But it also means that everybody could see everything that was happening. So I felt like I really couldn't hesitate or do anything. Like, I had to just kind of keep playing. So I kept playing. And I'm trying to find something that's going to be a cadence. Like, I have no idea what. And I was like, okay, that didn't work as a cadence. That didn't work. And then let's, okay, now here we can go to this game. Meanwhile, still fingertips tingling. So I'm thinking, should I tell them? Like, should I stop playing and tell them I just had a memory slip and that's one of the things that can happen? And I decided not to because they hadn't heard me play a lot yet and I didn't want them to be scared for me. You know, when you're in the audience, you don't want to feel afraid for the performer. It's okay, I think, if you are going along on a ride and it's okay if it gets a little rocky. That can actually be really exciting, but you need to trust the performer, and I hadn't earned their trust yet. So I felt like I couldn't actually tell them. So I'm playing, I'm trying to come up with something that sounds beautiful and emotional and sort of like Chopin. So I find my way to a cadence and I say my normal patter, including beautiful, emotional piece of music. And then I get into talking about all of the individual pieces in Opus 10 because I like to sort of run through them and explain them a little bit. So the patter goes fine. I start playing. Oh, also, while I'm doing my patter, I look out in the audience and there's a former student, which is fantastic. It was wonderful to see him and he came out to dinner with us afterwards and it was great. But it always puts me a little bit on edge when I have a student in the audience, especially if I don't know about it ahead of time. So my fingers are tingling. I just had a memory slip. I think I might be having a neurological event. I just improvised a lot. And then I see there's a student there. Okay, that's fine. So I start playing, you know, 10 number one is fine. 10 number one goes fine. I think I mostly am fine for a lot of Opus 10. But I had a pretty severe memory slip in maybe 10-4. I'm not sure if it was that one. But I definitely had a big memory slip in 10-8. Because there's a spot towards the end, the kind of coda. There's a spot where the patterns all change, and if I'm not thinking about it, I can play it perfectly. But if I try to think about what's happening, then I stumble, which is why I just stumbled so badly playing that right there, because I was thinking about it. Anyway, so by the time I get to 10 number 8, I'm pretty freaked out. Like, and my fingers are still tingling. And so 10 number 8, I totally made up like the last half of it and sort of kept some of the texture. You know, it's this one. So I don't even know what I did, but I tried to do something. Get to 10-9. I think I had a memory slip in that one too, because by this point I'm just really not sure what's going on. Definitely number 10. Definitely had a moment in there where I just ended up making, like, just sort of randomly with both hands. I mean, I did something. And then I think 11 was okay, and then the Revolutionary Etude was fine, I think. It's a little bit of a blur, as you can tell. Anyway, so I finished the first half, and everybody claps, and they clapped a lot. Like, they wanted me to come back out and take another bow, and I was just sort of shocked. So I went backstage and was sort of trying to gather myself. Fingertips are still tingling, still wondering what's going on. My sister comes backstage, obviously to sort of make sure that I'm okay. And I said, I just need to be alone and sent her back out and really thought about, should I talk to them? Like, should I tell them that that happened? And so I was sort of going over what my patter was going to be for the second half. And I wasn't actually planning on saying anything to them. I just sort of felt like, let me stick with my normal lines and not go off script and talk about it. But when I got out there for the second half, somehow I just had a moment where I said something about, I don't even know what I don't know what the introduction was about it. Oh no, I do know what it was. So I like to talk about how my relationship with the pieces is a swing of the pendulum between hubris and humility, and that maybe Chopin's relationship with the pieces might have been too, because he dedicated Opus 10 to Liszt and Opus 25 to Liszt's girlfriend. Anyway, so I was talking about that a little bit, and so when I said the thing about the swing of the pendulum from hubris to humility, I said, you know, some days these are really a struggle, and I don't know if you could tell, but it got pretty real up here in the first half. And the whole room kind of exhaled and then clapped. Like, they applauded me for admitting that what had just happened was hard. It was a really nice moment. It was really lovely. And then I played Opus 25 just fine. Like, the second half of the concert, I felt great about. And then afterwards, I took questions, and people didn't ask me about having made up some pretty large percentage of the notes in the first half of the concert, including somebody was there with the score. And I don't know if they didn't know, or if they didn't feel like they could ask me, even though I had sort of let them know about it. But it was interesting to me to feel like people, from the comments that I got afterwards, that they found the performance to be kind of important and memorable. I got a lovely email from somebody who said that it was gutsy and inspiring and transformative. That's what I want, right? Like, I want an audience to come and hear me play and leave feeling transformed and inspired. I mean, that's what could be better than that? And of course, wouldn't it be nice if I could get there by playing perfectly? But I don't think you do get there by playing perfectly. I think you get there by being present and honest. But the moral of the story is I will never, ever, ever drink coffee within 4 hours, within 4 hours before performing ever again. Probably not within 7 hours. No, if I have a concert at noon, I'll drink coffee in the morning, because otherwise I'll die. But yeah, that was an interesting lesson to learn. That's my story of my last time recording them. Yeah, so for practicing, I mostly am doing little bits of things. I'm doing groups with metronome. And I have a chart, and I'm making lists of which days I do what. So instead of practicing something like I'm doing. I'm not going to make you listen to that, but that's what I've been doing. Yeah. Okay. So then one other thing I want to tell you is that I am working on a Kickstarter video. I don't know if I talked to you about this yet, but I didn't get enough funding from my school to do my recording this summer, and I'm doing my recording this summer. I'm bound and determined. So I'm putting together a Kickstarter video, and I want to say two things about that. One is, if you would like to, I would so appreciate it if you would support me on that. Thank you, thank you, thank you if you do. And then the other thing is that, man, is it hard to ask for help like that. I'm so kind of blocked with this Kickstarter video, even though some of the thinking about it has been really useful in kind of thinking about why am I doing this project and why is this important to me. That's been really good. But actually making myself sit down and write the text that I want to say and get myself on camera and edit the video, I'm just the most enormous procrastinator in the world, it turns out, when it comes to that. I had wonderful help from a former student, now friend, for a few days, and that was great. And honestly, I have done nothing, zero zip zilch, since then on it. So I'm telling you about this because I need to get my act together. I need to get myself in gear and get this Kickstarter campaign launched and started. So I hope that you will. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the Kickstarter video, and then I'm going to make another podcast and say that it's out there. And if you don't hear another podcast within 2 weeks saying the Kickstarter is out there, I would so appreciate it if you would email me and nag me, because I need a little bit of nagging maybe. I've set up some accountability meetings with some good friends, so I think I'm going to be okay as far as that goes, but never hurts to have a little extra. Anyway, that's about it. You can find out more about this project at playitagainstsmig.com. You can find out about me at my website, jocelynsmigger.com. Please do look for that Kickstarter video. It should be coming soon. And you can follow me on Twitter at jocelynsmigger. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy.